Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live, interesting weekend in the United States. We're pretty divided, if you haven't noticed. Some information about what happened in the NFL over the weekend. Also, there was a big election in Germany. Preview of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, which talks quite a bit about that. We'll have some information about that for you. And also, continue to look at this amazing book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. The world will get better, believe it or not. That and more, this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're at 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com as well. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, go ahead and do so at kpcgfm. Any emails you'd like to send in, you can send those to comments at kpcg.fm. And we're happy to take a look at those for you. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. TheTrumpet.com today, top story, a deadly spark on the Temple Mount, how a terrorist attack almost set off the Jerusalem powder keg. That's by Brent Nachtigall, who is over there in Jerusalem, and he's got his finger on the pulse of what's happening. Make sure you listen for Watch Jerusalem as well. And you can check out that website, too. They've got a lot of great information there. And related to that story there at thetrumpet.com, Jerusalem and Prophecy in 90 Seconds. It's a video that kind of gives you a quick synopsis of that book, Jerusalem and Prophecy, and then get the book, too, because it's a great book as well. Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, today. Kind of two segments, I guess, talked about the German election a fair bit. By the way, there are things going on outside of the NFL protests, surprisingly. I wonder, maybe some of them were protesting the German election. I won't stand up for Deutschland über alles.
You know, that wouldn't be surprising, considering if you ask 10 different players their reasoning, they'd probably give you 10 different answers.
Yeah, it is true. Protesting the protesters. But the German election happened over the weekend, and Mr. Stephen Fleury talks to Richard Palmer about that a fair bit, and Richard really looks at that often and gets some good insight into what you can expect to see there in Germany. Of course, Angela Merkel won, but it didn't go great for her. This is a headline. Weakened Merkel wins fourth term hit by nationalist earthquake. Chancellor Angela Merkel clinched a fourth term in Germany's election Sunday, but her victory was clouded by the entry into parliament of the hard-right AfD in the best showing for a nationalist force since World War II. Anytime something in Germany is happening for the first time since World War II, that should make you stop and pay attention. Merkel, who after 12 years in power had a double-digit lead for most of the campaign, scored around 33% of the vote with her conservative Christian Union CDU-CSU bloc, according to preliminary results. It was their worst score since 1949. So she's still in power, but has lost a lot of power. And then you have this very nationalistic right-wing AfD party in there. They're very much against immigration and so forth. They're proud of what the German soldiers did in World War II. So, and it's I think it's a lot easier to sit there with some power but not ultimately in charge because you can be the critic. And so I think Ms. Merkel's going to have a tough go.
Right. With her power being shakier than ever and than having formerly a fringe party having as much power as it does now, at least having its voice amplified, she's going to have a tough time governing. And we'll have to see if she continues to stand by some of her policies like migration, where she keeps on saying we're going to maintain that policy of having open doors for migrants, despite the fact that so many people hate that policy.
And every attack, terror attack or problem, it's just another chink in the armor there for her. And Richard Palmer points out when he's being interviewed there, too, that you've got this extreme AfD party that now they have a voice in government, you know, where before they would say things, but you could kind of dismiss them like, that's that crazy group. But now they're actually represented. So you're going to have to listen to them and their ideas, whether you like it or not. There's a certain amount of the German people, obviously, that voted for them. Mm-hmm. And so support those strong strong opinions. And you see it, I guess, here in the U.S. You see it in Germany, other nations, very nationalistic. Everyone's kind of retreating to their own camps and gearing up.
That's true. And it does seem like people are, even if the party they're voting for is extreme, they're just tired of seeing the same problems persist with the same detached liberal leaders. I mean, Angela Merkel likes to think of the world as a place where you can be multicultural and coexist and not have to worry about your neighbor possibly attacking you. But reality shows that that's just not how it works. This world is a place full of dangerous predators, and you have to defend yourself from those types of people. You can't just be letting terrorists flooding into your country. Not that all migrants are terrorists, but they're being extremely naive in who they let in.
Yeah, it's definitely a volatile time over there. Also, then in the second part of the program, he mentioned a little bit about the NFL players versus President Trump. And, you know, really, at the heart of it, it's just a giant distraction. It's a lot of heated arguments and division there in the U.S. is weakening the U.S. And but then people are ignoring the other things. I mean, you know, wouldn't that be fascinating to, because you're going to have a lot of press conferences today about NFL things. To get a coach up there, or a player that's got a lot to say, and you say, well, what do you think about the German elections? They don't even know what you're talking about. I don't think. Now, there may be some that do, but I would think most have no concept. Maybe couldn't even identify Germany on a map. I don't know if that's going too far, but I mean, really, you know, it's very, people get really in their little cocoons and don't think about the bigger world.
And probably if you even ask them for facts about the thing they're protesting, they couldn't give you anything that is valid, at least. I mean, what facts are they drawing on to say that police are massacring minorities in this country? Clearly, they are getting their supposed facts from a very bad source, because that simply is not even happening at all.
Yeah, I heard some commentator today being very emotional about the protesting over the weekend, and saying they were upset because, and they support the protest, but they were upset because they weren't protesting about the original protest anymore. Now it was something else, and they wanted to get back to the point that and in their words, you know, that black men are being killed by police. And as they were saying this, I was thinking, well, I don't know. I've been checking the headlines. I haven't seen anything like that happen. I mean, occasionally it does happen, and it happens to all races. I mean, if you're a criminal, you're probably going to have a problem. Occasionally, maybe somebody's innocent, but pretty rare, I would think. But I was thinking, well, where are all the big stories about it? You know, if it's still such a big, big problem, I haven't seen anything in the news. Have you seen anything where there's been some? And the media's looking. They're looking find something like that. I haven't seen anything in months.
Well, you're absolutely right. The media is searching high and low to bring these examples to the forefront, and yet they're not having too much success. I mean, there was that acquittal of the police officer in St. Louis, which was from a case that was back in 2011. That was 6 years ago. I haven't seen one where even the facts of a biased article do not admit that the person being shot was a criminal or was doing something extremely foolish, like hiding his hands suspiciously in his vehicle. You know, things like that, where the police officer is automatically going to have his guard up. If you're not respectful, saying yes, sir, yes, ma'am to the police, if you're not complying with their orders without any back talk, if you are not staying in the vehicle when you're told to stay in, if you're not getting out of the vehicle when you're told to get out, if you try to drive off when they pull you over or you ram their vehicle, there are a lot of ways that you could actually get hurt. But if you don't do those things, I've never seen a story where they bring it out that the police officer shot someone who was complying with them.
When they were protesting there in St. Louis, they were chanting, "Whose streets are streets?" Ooh. I'm like, well, who's you? I mean, the mob? You rule the streets?
Who are they going to turn to when they get mugged by the mob they're a part of?
I mean, who would want to be on that type of a street? And that's the truth in a lot of cases. Some of those neighborhoods, some of the seedier elements do rule the streets. Mm-hmm. So, well, I don't know. Bad deal.
Well, the thing is, there is a false argument made that anyone who is not down with the cause of police brutality thinks that police are right across the board. No one is saying that every single officer has acted correctly in every single situation. I don't think conservatives are ignoring the fact that sometimes accidents happen or that a mistake is made. But you see very clearly a lot of cases where the judges put those guys away for a long time. If they make a mistake and someone is wrongly killed, they get imprisoned, don't they? I don't know of cases where the facts show that the policemen are guilty and they get away scot-free.
Yeah, in most cases, it seems like there's at least, you know, a lot going on in those situations to where it's not a clear cut. A historical note today that's interesting, especially in relation to some of these protesting that are going on. 1789 on this day, U.S. Congress proposes the Bill of Rights. Articles 3 through 12, known as the Bill of Rights, became the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution and contained guarantees of essential rights. First Amendment, everybody likes to talk about, freedom of religion, speech, and the press. Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. Third is housing of soldiers. Fourth, protection from unreasonable search and seizures. Fifth, protection of rights to life, liberty, and property. Sixth, rights of accused persons in criminal cases. Seven, rights in civil cases. Eight, excessive bail, fines, and punishments forbidden. Nine, other rights kept by the people. And 10, undelegated powers kept by the state and the people. So if you get a chance, not a bad idea to go back and look at the Bill of Rights. I guess the ones people talk about the most would be the First Amendment. And then also the rights of the accused persons in criminal cases. I think people talk about that one a fair bit. They always say, you got to know your rights. So those are our rights. But they're being pretty loosely defined today to do quite a few things that I think are probably outside of the scope of the spirit of some of those laws.
We do have people all the time now saying that this presidential administration is trying to take away those rights. I've yet to see it happen. I don't know. I've yet to even see the president insinuate that he was going to try to take away any rights listed there. But people are just up in outrage right now. They're part of an emotional furor. And so I guess to them, somehow the president is trying to take away their rights. He's a homophobe despite waving the rainbow flag at the Republican National Convention. He's a racist despite hiring plenty of minorities. They're just going to say what they're going to say. And meanwhile, people are going to continue having all their rights, just despite whatever they say about it.
Yep. So 1789, that's an interesting day there in history. But the U.S. Congress proposes the Bill of Rights. So we've made it a little over 200 years. Let's see, see how long that continues.
You know, the main thing is that people complain too much. I don't know how many facts actually support these positions, but it's just constant complaining. You have to wonder what people starving to death in places like Africa or people who can't even go to the grocery store in Venezuela must think of these pampered, spoiled brats coming out and kneeling for their own nation's anthem. They must get pretty mad if they hear about those things.
Yeah, I think it certainly is not a good look on the world scene. That's for sure. Definitely not a united front. So interesting times. And as you pointed out earlier, we were talking, you know, they have another one last game for the week tonight. And it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Dallas Cowboys, I guess, right? And
right.
Their owner is, he's not been in favor of all these protests. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I know at least in week one, not a single Cowboys player protested. And that's what we're talking about here. These guys can protest anywhere they feel like it, but when they go to work, they are supposed to comply with the rules of their employer. The Cowboys owner, whatever you might want to say about him, he truly is patriotic, and he's not going to stand for these protests that are going to alienate half of the fan base, especially. It's not even good from a business standpoint. P.K. Subban, he's on the Nashville Predators, the team that just recently went to the Stanley Cup. He was talking about all the different ways that you can get yourself in trouble on social media and how he actually has a team that helps him, you know, basically keep his mouth shut and not get himself in trouble online, because at the end of the day, he's representing his team. He is going to work for that team, and he doesn't want to represent them in a bad light. It would be really nice if we saw more athletes treat their jobs that way and show some professionalism.
Yeah, it's kind of like an assumption that these sports leagues or anything, like, they'll just always be like, there's some eternal institution. They've only been around a few decades because we've been blessed enough in the U.S. to have some leisure time and some leisure money. There's no guarantee they'll always be here. You know, I think people tend to think that, you know, they can do whatever they want, but there'll always be the football game on Sunday. Well, not always. If people don't want to go to it, or if there's a lot more serious issues to deal with, well, your football fund's done. And so I think they're biting the hand that feeds for sure, because let's face it, I mean, even though it's a brutal sport and I know people get injured, you know, it's not something that it's a leisure time activity that people are paid for. And there are real world issues that are out there that we've been able to not have to face as much because we're in a very blessed country. Even the rich, the poor, whoever, still very blessed in the U.S.
That's very true. And as far as I understand it, sports leagues are not an arm of the government. They operate by capitalism.
Right.
And if enough people get sick of it and stop watching, then they go out of business. That's just simply how it works in this country and in some other countries as well. But you have to put a good product on the field, and you can't be forcing these types of things on people. There's no movie or TV genre that focuses on making people furious. I mean, there's all types of horror and all that other garbage, but they still have never come up with a genre that's all about making people upset when they watch it. That's because it doesn't sell. It doesn't work. People do not want to spend their leisure time getting furious about things like this.
Yeah, that's true. It's I think everyone has enough stress in their life. You don't need to have other stress come in during leisure time activities. Shifting gears here to a much more positive subject, we've been talking about this book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, what it will be like. There's a couple of chapters to discuss yet. And so if you've read this book before, you know it's talking about, or it's looking at what the Bible says about a future world that would seem sort of odd to people if they haven't read much about it. But the Bible's full of prophecies that Christ is returning. By the way, it didn't happen on Saturday, in case people were wondering. Remember the predictions? We were very confident that we'd still be here Monday, and here we are. I did see a hat in the road yesterday. I don't think anybody got raptured, but I know that there was a lone baseball cap in the road. But I think that just blew off somebody's head. But there is, of course, a much better world that is coming in a very realistic way. And Mr. Herbert Armstrong talks about that in this book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. Chapter 6 we want to talk about today. He's a very positive chapter. Now picture tomorrow's world. He says, now see a glimpse into a world of no illiteracy, if you can imagine this. No illiteracy, no poverty, no famine and starvation. Into a world where crime decreases rapidly. People learn honesty, chastity, human kindness, and happiness. A world of peace, prosperity, abundant well-being. A world with no protests, we might add. There will be nothing to protest. And if somebody has a protest that's ridiculous, they'll be told to settle down and do something productive. But that world is coming, and it's not going to come through, you know, people being upset and yelling and holding signs or whatever. It's going to come because Christ is going to bring God's government to this world, and it's going to bring great, great blessings. But Christ's going to have to enforce it on people, force people to actually be happy, force people to actually go the right direction. And it just shows you, you know, what a different world it will be compared to what we see today.
Isn't that a tragedy that it has to be done that way, that people, even after 6,000 years of man's history, will not realize that their own way did not do them any good? They're still going to be forced. I mean, there are even scriptures that say, like, well into the millennium, it's implied that people will not go up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles in Jerusalem like they're supposed to. And so God will have to still curse them with drought and with, you know, hardly any harvest. That's just because people are so naturally rebellious and hostile against God. Even long after the right government is established, there will be even whole nations that are not complying like they should.
Yeah, it takes time to get to accept the way that does work correctly. And Mr. Armstrong talks about a very specific problem that we do see on the earth today, and that is the population explosion and some of the resulting problems because of that. He says, God has a solution, and how simple it is. Simply make most of the earth cultivatable. That is not a word that I like to say. Cultivatable. There we go. Reduce the bare, snow-swept, and craggy mountains. Raise up some of the deep and desert valleys. Change the world weather patterns. How much are we thinking about weather patterns today? Quite a bit with the hurricanes and so forth. So you can read that and think, well, come on, how can you do that? Well, man can't do that. But God can do that, and that's the point. He's going to make the earth a much more livable place than it even is today.
And Mr. Armstrong did bring out a fascinating point in that chapter, too, that mountains, as they exist today, didn't just come there. God personally shaped them. He made the earth force up mountains. Likewise, God could also force down the mountains and make them become flat, tillable land again. And if we did have land that was flat and the soil was all fertile, we didn't have these gigantic deserts, if we didn't have oceans taking up something like 3/4 of the earth's surface, we would have a whole lot more land to solve the problem of the population explosion and even to solve the problem of food shortages.
And we do see people trying this to some extent, having a little bit of success because we're limited in what we can do, but irrigation to bring water and try to make some areas more fertile that haven't been. Mm-hmm. You know, even when I was in college, I remember them talking about in an astronomy class about how, you know, the way you can make a planet habitable. And they've observed the rules and they understand what it takes, but they don't have the power to do it. So we're not talking about, like, you know, magic hocus pocus here. I mean, we're talking about people know, people that have studied into it, they do have a pretty good idea of how you could take a planet like a Mars or something and make it habitable. But who's got the power to do it? That's the thing. Man doesn't, but God does. And if people say, well, that seems a little, you know, hard, the point is made, like Mr. Armstrong brings out, well, how did it get there in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't look at the mountain today and say, impossible, because we can see it. It's standing right there.
Exactly.
Well, what about the opposite? Couldn't it be changed? And it's going to be, and it's going to allow more land, more area, more people on this world. And that's something that the Bible talks a lot about all throughout many, many scriptures after Christ returns. That's the way the world's going to be.
That's true. And, of course, why couldn't the Creator shape the earth and do with it as he pleases? If he made it in the first place, clearly he has a lot more power than we do. Man has been able to do certain things to the earth, but they have largely been destructive. For example, the Middle East, which is largely desert now, used to be some of the most fertile land in the entire world, but through many years of especially bad farming practices, it now is a desert. And that changed because of the way that man treated the earth. And of course, we have pollution problems all over the world. That's not to say that climate change is our number one threat, but the fact that we dump sewage in our rivers and lakes a lot of the time is not a good way of preserving the environment. And you can see the effects of it. Man has had some power over the earth in a bad way. God at least can do some things in a good way.
Yeah, and he writes here, Mr. Armstrong says, after doing some of these things, including a few other things too, you know, getting rid of the permafrost and the tundra, you can't use that. In Antarctica and Greenland and some of North America, there in other places, make level the huge mountains. And then get rid of some of those deep ice packs and snow drifts. Global warming, right? Yeah. it's a good thing if it's done the right way. And then he says, provide good, gentle rainfall and right balance. Well, who can do that? Well, God can do that. Yep. And, you know, you look at the difference between good, gentle rainfall and either not enough water, you have a desert, too much water, you have floods like we saw in Houston. Ugh. It's got to be just right. And human beings, for all that the knowledge that we've acquired, we can't do a single thing about it. You know, we can build the wall and hope the water doesn't come in, or we can try to pump water from some other place into a desert, but we can't make it rain.
That's true, and of course, we try. I mean, we try to do all we can, and a big part of climate change is saying that we have more power over the environment than we actually do. It's almost like appointing human beings God of the environment when we can't control the rain. We can't do anything about an earthquake that tears a city in half. That earthquake in Mexico killed hundreds of people, and despite any of our efforts from our seismologists, we could never have prevented that from happening. We could encourage people to move away from it, but we could never stop these things from taking place. There are going to be natural disasters as a curse from God, and we can't do anything about that.
Yeah, other than make changes, which is the whole point of them.
Large-scale repentance is the only way, and that's just not happening.
Right. Not at this point, anyway. But Mr. Armstrong says, well, what happens if you have the proper rain? You have all this land available. He says you get multiple millions of acres of unbelievably fertile, productive, wonderful farmland suddenly become available, just waiting to be discovered and pioneered. Impossible? He says, well, yeah, in the hands of man, certainly. But look at what God promises. He says, fear not, you worm Jacob. <That's> kind of giving us some perspective there. And you men of Israel, he says, I will help you, says the Eternal and the Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. So, you know, sometimes I suppose people could look at God as a harsh God that wants to just cause, you know, suffering or something. But the punishment comes because people need to be, we need to be corrected. We need to get to know God. And once people do that, then he's very, you know, very merciful, very forgiving, and then ready and willing to dump just blessing upon blessing upon blessing upon people. It's all there waiting. It's just a matter of people turning from evil and obeying God's laws.
And that comparison of Jacob to a worm is quite humbling, but it's so accurate, isn't it? Earthworms just dwell in the soil. We came straight out of the soil created by God, and that it would help for all of us to think about that a little bit more often. An earthworm can't do much. I mean, he can till the land a little bit naturally, but he's not going to have such an impact on the entire earth that he can stop an earthquake, and neither can we. We're just like worms, and we need to have that humility before God.
Yeah, and it talks here, and this is all coming from Isaiah 41, so you can look at that if you'd like to, but God says, I'm going to make a new sharp threshing instrument having teeth that you shall thresh the mountains. So how are they going to be leveled? Well, there's a machine coming to do that.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen anything like that.
No. And I mean, there's a lot of people out there that love big machinery, work on it, and it's you know, they really enjoy that. This is next level, obviously. So it's funny, too, because sometimes people have a thought maybe that going back to, say, biblical principles or biblical ways of living means, you know, you live with no technology or something like that. Well, this is a new technology, mm-hmm. This amazing new sharp threshing instrument having teeth. It's always interesting the way it's described in the Bible, too. I suppose, you know, the prophets of old, in this case Isaiah, I don't know if he saw it in vision or how he understood this, but then they have to try to describe it the best they can. You know, and that's, you know, I'm sure that's probably a pretty good description of what it is.
Exactly. And it's also true that whenever we're talking about like these big instruments, that does reveal as well maybe a false conception perception that we sometimes have that God's just going to snap his fingers and the entire earth will change the way it's supposed to. In a lot of cases, human beings are going to have to be doing those physical jobs and reforming the earth. We have a really fantastic responsibility in that way. It's not just a matter of us sitting back and doing nothing while God does it all in 1 second.
Right. And he goes on here to say, this is in Isaiah 41, how if people are needing water and they're thirsty and there isn't any, and they cry out to God, he's going to hear them and give it to them. He'll make fountains of water. He's going to plant in the wilderness the cedar, all these different trees. I mean, we know that just from looking at the world today. If you have a lack of trees in some areas, you have soil erosion, mm-hmm. You have other problems. So there's scientific laws that are in place to get things going in the right direction, and it's very practical. But again, it takes God's power to do it, and it takes mankind being cooperative. It's hard to get together. Even some of, say, the environmental issues people would like to tackle today. How are you ever going to do it when you're fighting each other? I mean, even just look at the United States over the weekend. Are we all going to get together and solve our quote-unquote environmental problems when we can't even agree? Should we stand up? Should we sit down? You kneel, I'll stand. You stay in the room. We can't even do anything together. So you need a unity of mind, and that comes from a law. We all have to follow the same law, which, of course, is the Ten Commandments. You know, if they want to solve any problems environmentally or whatever, everyone has to get back to that one law.
Yeah, if there's no peace, everyone's going to be fighting, and there will be no one left over at some point to even deal with these environmental issues. Clearly, a much more grave and immediate threat is human beings not being able to coexist peacefully. We see that all over the world. Our own country is on the verge of becoming two because our differences at this point are irreconcilable. We do need to have peace, and like plenty of world leaders throughout history have said, and they have realized, we can't have world peace unless some divine higher power intervenes. At the same time, though, they think that's impossible.
Yeah. Well, and it's fascinating, too, because we do have a population explosion on the earth. And there's two ways that it'll go. One is man runs his course and everyone ends up dead. That's the end of your population explosion. On the other hand, when Christ returns, he just makes more room for more people. You know, more people is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it's a bad thing when you can't get along and you're fighting and all of this. And Mr. Armstrong goes on to say, too, that in the world tomorrow, after Christ returns, sickness and disease is going to be taken care of. It's going to be gone. I mean, that's a major killer in this world, whether it be malnutrition and starvation in certain nations, or it be the chronic diseases here in these more affluent nations. Once you get rid of sickness and disease, and one of the main ways is to re-educate people in how to prevent the causes of those, then all of a sudden you're going to have healthy people again, much more healthy, instead of you know, walking around in these chronic diseases in the West or having starvation and other things in the poorer nations.
Healthier people, happier people as well. If people are not waking up barely alive in the morning, they're going to have a lot more happiness and peace of mind, and they're actually going to want to live life, and they'll have drive to produce things, which is not the case when your health is horrible. It's hard to even wake up. So to have good health, the productivity of all people on earth is going to vastly increase as well.
Yeah, and I think today, I'm sure we'd all be surprised to know we should feel much better than we do. I mean, even if we're not, say, suffering with a particular ailment at this time that we know about, just the way people feel in general, I think, is a lot worse than it should be. Mm-hmm. Because of diet, primarily the Western diet. You know, you drive down any road in any city, and if you look at the signs for the restaurants, you could almost just picture them as diseases. And not to knock any restaurant, but I mean, it's just the Western diet in general. If you stop there and there and there and there, give it 20 years and you're going to end up with something. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, the way food is mass produced now, and it's manufactured to take out all the nutrients, but put in some sort of chemicals that make it taste better and almost even make it addictive. That's not going to help health in any way. But whenever we have restaurants that span the nation, and there's thousands of different establishments of a McDonald's or whatever else, you have to be able to ship quickly to those places. You have to be able to have food that'll last forever and not rot while it's on the way to these different locations. So just the fact that it's mass produced automatically means that it's going to be unhealthy.
Yeah, soil's depleted, as you know, in a lot of cases, and then it's forced. The ground is forced, and so the food itself isn't great, and then it's processed, and on and on it goes.
That's a great point too, because God even talks about in the Bible a land Sabbath every 7 years, giving the land a break for a year. People act like the Bible is a book of primitive ancient cavemen, and yet, if we'd actually apply that simple principle right there, our land that once was fertile would not be drying out and not producing anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. The more you look into the Bible, the things that were commanded to, say, ancient Israel, just some physical things. All these years later, science kind of catches up with it a little bit and says, hey, you know, we shouldn't do this or that. And you think, you know what? There's a scripture that talks about that.
Mm-hmm.
Even we talked about earlier about the tattoos.
Yeah.
Well, there is a command to not mark yourself.
Right.
You know, I know people think that's old-fashioned, but that's the truth. And now they're finding out that, you know what, that can cause cancer.
Yeah, and the example of disease epidemics, the Israelites were commanded to make sure, like, if they had people with leprosy in the camp, that they actually separated themselves, they quarantined themselves so that didn't spread around. You had the bubonic plague just killing millions of people, I believe it was, in Europe. And a big reason for that was because those who were sick still mingled with everyone else like they were totally fine. And of course, you had filth in the streets, people not even cleaning up their environment. There was no basic hygiene or health laws like the Israelites had revealed to them by God. If they had been following any of those biblical health codes, they would have prevented all these different problems, all these huge diseases that killed so many people prematurely.
That's right. And you know, there's some people, they look and they say, I wonder where Israel ended up going. You know, what happened to Israel, the lost tribes? Well, we have, of course, a lot of information about that in the United States and Britain and prophecy, and there's a lot of great proofs there as to where it went. I'll be the spoiler here and tell you it's the United States and Britain.
It's right in the title.
Yeah, and some other nations as well, but those are some of the big ones. But even if you just wanted to look at the health laws like you talked about, even though, of course, there's a lot of problems in these countries, just as far as the basic cleanliness and hygiene and so forth. you see that here in a lot of the Western nations, and you don't see it in other parts of the world. Why? Well, how do we figure it out? Mm-hmm. Well, it's because God told Israel anciently, this is what you do. This is how you live. You don't relieve yourself in the same stream you drink out of.
Right.
Common sense, right? Well, not to everybody.
Yeah, that's the question. Who does it better than these nations? America, Canada, Australia, Britain, these other nations, where hand washing is always taught, and people get into like a 10-step plan of how to wash your hands the right way. You never see any detail like that in other cultures, where pretty much like hand washing is either doesn't happen, or you keep one hand dirty and you wash the other one maybe. But it just, that's disgusting. But of course, if you don't have those laws taught to you, we're human beings. We are a creation, and we have to let our creator instruct us on these things, or else what seems so obvious really isn't.
Right. There are laws that affect the earth, affect the universe, affect human beings, and not just happenstance. Mr. Armstrong here in this chapter in the Wonderful World Tomorrow book says that God is going to get rid of disease and sickness, and he promises that in the Bible. And he says that is the express aim of all the vast medical and pharmaceutical companies today, the final conquering of the ills, sicknesses, and diseases of mankind. But medical science seeks to find cures for sicknesses, cures for the flu and the common cold and so forth, cures for cancer and on and on and on. But they're not finding any cures in most cases. The cures are to never have them in the first place, unless you're going to be healed.
Yeah.
But it's to not get them in the first place. That's the point. And he even quotes a doctor in here who says they've been so busy trying to, figure out how to solve these disease problems in terms of a pill or something, they haven't had the time to put into looking at the cause of them. Because there are a lot of doctors that want to do that. And there are a lot of doctors. I'm reading a book right now by one who he had all the medical training, but then he got more interested in the natural side of it. And so it's not that the medical profession as a whole is out to do ill. They are trying to help, but in a lot of cases, going about it the wrong way.
They're getting overwhelmed by just such a high demand of people who have 40 different ailments and need basically a quick fix. So the doctors are then occupied by trying to help all those people, when really, if we had a lot more doctors who did focus on the natural way of things and focus on instructing people, I've never heard a doctor say like, well, maybe you should exercise more or try to lose a little weight. Like they don't usually say that unless you specifically ask them for advice. Otherwise, they don't want to offend their patients and they'll just offer a pill instead.
Yeah, unless they think you maybe can't pay. Then they'll be like, well, you probably could just do this and do that. And in some cases, things get pretty bad. There's not a lot a person can do. But Mr. Armstrong does say here that in the world tomorrow when Christ returns, he says there's probably going to be a place for doctors, but it will be teaching people to keep well by avoiding the causes of diseases. And that's going to require a new type of medical education. And it's really, it really is an exciting chapter to look at. And again, there's a lot more here than we can discuss today. He goes on to talk about how these waste cities are going to be rebuilt and repopulated. And it's going to be just a wonderful thing. Imagine going to a city that's actually beautiful. It doesn't have, the rundown, dilapidated part or the yucky part of town, which every town does, where it's actually a nice, like a really nice city. I don't know that we've ever seen anything like that.
Yeah, and on top of that, pristinely physically clean. Places in India that cows roam the streets, that's not necessarily the healthiest thing, or people relieving themselves by the side of the road. Even the physical cleanliness of these cities is deplorable. That's not even just talking about cities over in the East. What about here, where there's tons of trash in the street? Oftentimes the dumpsters are overflowing. I see that all the time. Just because the cities are so big and the trash men would have to work like 20-hour days to keep up with all the trash that is produced. And of course, like you mentioned, the danger is it's real and it's pretty much everywhere. I went to Chicago a couple years ago and pretty much felt under threat the entire time. I mean, the boldness of the criminals there, one of them offered me marijuana mere feet away from a police officer. So whenever the criminals feel like they're in charge, and they do in a lot of cities, no one else feels safe.
Yeah, it's going to be just a different world, but it's very exciting to look at this chapter and this entire book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, And again, especially if you go into it with the attitude of realizing that there are real laws to put into place to make these things happen. It's not just like some fantasy of, wouldn't it be nice if? Mm-hmm. Like, these things will happen. And so it is discouraging when you see some of the headlines and you see what's going on in the world today and people get really sick of it. There is a much better world that's coming. And get this book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. And it also talks in this chapter about people being unified, even nations getting along with each other. Can you imagine that? Not trying to take advantage of each other or, you know, having this sort of awkward alliance because somebody else might destroy them, but getting along and working. How much could be done in the world if people got along and didn't worry about war and dishonesty and all of that?
Literally hundreds of times more work could get done. This whole booklet is all about actual practical solutions. That's what we don't see right now. We see people calling each other names and bickering every chance they get, like small children, when we could be talking about some solutions. The thing is, even when we look at solutions, we're focusing on the physical in this country and others, and we have to look to the spiritual.
Yeah, Mr. Armstrong talks a lot about that in many books, about how there's the cause of problems is spiritual, and physical solutions don't work. Check out this book. It is The Wonderful World Tomorrow. It's free. It's at thetrumpet.com, and it's just a great book, especially this time of the year to look at. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure this is with the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turchin, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.